Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
As I mentioned to you at the start of the show on Friday, we conducted a pre-recorded interview with Taoiseach Leo Varadkar as he was here in Kildare, visiting Kildare Town and Newbridge as part of the Bridget 1500 celebrations. On his way back to Dublin, he called in to us here at the station at the M7 Business Park to give us an in-depth interview on a range of issues that are affecting people across the county and across the country. So just to flag that this was recorded on Friday. Anything that kind of happened over the weekend obviously doesn't get referenced in terms of timeliness, etc. Here's what Leo Varadkar had to say. Just to get to some of the main points really that are making the headlines over the last number of weeks and really concerning people. If we start off with the cost of living crisis, of course, there was an article in The Independent from Senan Maloney last week saying the government can't afford to continue all cost of living supports due to expire next month. They were in your own words. Why not? And which supports are going to be cancelled, so to speak?
Yeah, well, that, you know, that's something we're going to have to determine in the next couple of weeks. The cost of living is biting, really hurting families, individuals, businesses. Inflation is now slowing down, but that's not to say that prices are falling. It's just that they're increasing at a slower rate than they were increasing. So we understand that people need more help. A lot of the things we have introduced in the last few weeks are permanent, by the way. So, you know, the €12 a week increase in the pension and welfare payments, the income tax cuts that people will see in their payslip, the reduction in the childcare fees, the rent credit, which renters are encouraged to apply for now. If you're renting, make sure you do apply for that. The increase in the minimum wage, for example, all those things are permanent.
Okay, are they enough? Are they enough?
I suppose it depends on everyone's individual circumstances. For some people they will, for others they won't. If you take the living wage increase, for example, or the minimum wage increase, that's an increase ahead of inflation, but barely ahead of inflation. So it does depend on people's individual circumstances. But I think what you're getting at there is some of the temporary things that were done that are due to expire at the end of February. So we took the excise down on petrol and diesel. We took the VAT down on electricity and gas. And we also brought in this TBES scheme to help businesses with their energy costs, for example. So they're all supposed to end at the end of February. I'm saying that's not going to happen. You know, the cost of living is not under control and people need continuing help, I believe, through the spring and summer and even into next year.
So it hasn't been decided then really what supports are going to end. And when they end, are we likely then, you know, when we see the likes of St. Vincent de Paul are saying that more people than ever have been having to use their facilities, etc. Are we likely to see then a backtrack from government when we take these supports back again that in 5-6 months down the line they'll have to be reintroduced? How feasible is that to take things back, give them back, etc.?
Well, there's two things we have to bear in mind. You know, first of all, is can we afford it? You know, what is the capacity of the state, i.e. the taxpayer, your listeners, to continue to fund government interventions to help people with the cost of living? So that's one factor we should take into account. The other factor we should take into account is what's happening in terms of price developments. You know, if we see the cost of energy, electricity, gas fall over the next few months, that's a very different context than if we were to see the price of gas and electricity continue to rise over the next few months. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is something that we've responded to dynamically from the very start, from when the inflation crisis started and prices really started rising. And that's the approach that we're going to continue to take, intervening to help people out to the extent that we can afford it, and also monitoring prices to help us decide what are the best things to do. And whatever we do will be both universal and targeted. There'll be help for everyone, but of course it'll be targeted at those that need it the most, particularly pensioners, families, people on very low incomes.
Okay, what about housing then? If we take a look at housing, and obviously that impacts people in terms of pricing, etc. I know you said that the rent credits are permanent, but last week we spoke to James Lawless, Fianna Fáil TD, who was discussing how the government had reached targets in terms of housing for all. Mm. And it seemed as though Fianna Fáil were kind of patting themselves on the back there. You know, Housing Minister Dara O'Brien coming out and saying, you know, how good the government are doing. Was it a little bit tone deaf, do you feel, considering that you had said yourself that we'd missed our social housing targets, that we have record numbers of homelessness, and we have refugees coming into this country, a lot of whom are not getting accommodation. So I think we have to be very careful, really, what we're patting ourselves on the back for.
you know, I didn't hear those comments, so I can't really comment on them directly. I understand, and everyone in government, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Greens, all understand how serious the housing crisis is, how it's affecting people in all sorts of different ways, whether it's people who can't afford to buy their first home, people paying high rents, people experiencing homelessness. And it's holding the country back in other ways in terms of investment, in terms of trying to recruit and retain people to work in businesses and public services. So we all get that. We understand it. We do have a plan, Housing for All. We are seeing some progress. You know, we did exceed our target for new homes being built last year, nearly 30,000. That's the highest in more than 10 years, you know, new homes being built. And that doesn't even include student accommodation or derelict homes being brought back into use. And last year, more than 16,000, including in this county, more than 16,000 young people, couples, bought their first home. That's the highest in 15 years. And take social housing, for example, and that is a target we didn't meet. You're right.
Why not?
Because we weren't able to build enough houses in time. So the target was about 9,000. It'll be a bit short of that. We don't know the exact figure yet. I don't know exactly what the figure is because we don't know yet, but it'll be a bit short of 9,000. But it will still be more new social housing built in Ireland any year since 1975. It's not that nothing's happening. A lot is happening. But we're catching up on a prolonged period in Ireland when very few new homes were built for lots of different reasons. And also a time at which the population is rising rapidly.
Are the targets overly ambitious then, would you feel, if we're not reaching them?
I don't believe they're overly ambitious, and we did meet the most important target. The most important target is for last year was to build more than 25,000 new homes. We built 30,000 new homes, so that's the most important target. A lot of people will get into the intricacies of what type of home it was and what type of land it was built on. The most important target is building a lot more new homes, and I want to beat that this year. I'm not happy to say that beating our target last year in terms of new homes is enough. I think the target, if I have it right, for this year is another 29,000. I don't think that's enough, given our rising population, given the amount of people who live in overcrowded accommodation, and I want to see us build more than 30,000 new homes this year.
Okay, if we look at a similar issue again, then I touched on it there, the refugee crisis. What's your assessment on how this is being managed? And I completely understand it's an emergency situation, it's an unprecedented situation, etc., etc. We've heard all of that. What people want now is real action and consultation. So I understand what the government are trying to do and the situation that they're in. How it's been handled, though, how do you think that that's worked? And maybe the divide that it's causing within public.
Well, I think to fully understand what we're facing, it is important to put it into context. Nearly 7 million people alone have left Ukraine because of the war there. 7 million, more than the entire population of Ireland. Roughly 70,000 of those, maybe 1%, have come to Ireland seeking refuge. And then we've people coming from other parts of the world as well for all sorts of different reasons. Sometimes people with work permits, you know, who we need to work in our health service, for example. Sometimes people coming here looking for international protection. So what we're experiencing in Europe and in Ireland is the kind of refugee crisis that we haven't seen in Europe since World War II.
What I'm getting at here is, I guess, the private deals that are being done with developers or landowners with the government, and they're not being implemented or spoken about within the wider community and housing estates. So I know that you can't comment on each individual case, but for example, here in Kildare, we have, you know, refugees going into an equestrian centre. There was no consultation done with the people of Kill. There's talk now about a stately home in Leixlip being used that's within a housing estate. And I've said it again and I'll say it again and again that generally people will move with the government and with what you're trying to implement, but they have to be brought along with you. Why is there not being that consultation?
Well, you know, we're doing our best to consult with people. Minister O'Brien, Joe O'Brien, just appointed there back before Christmas, is being given special responsibility now for engaging and informing communities about matters such as this. But there's 3,000 arriving a month. You know, 3,000 people arriving a month, mostly from Ukraine, but also from other parts of the world, seeking protection, seeking accommodation from the state. Just to look at it another way, imagine if we had amazing foresight, and this time 2 years ago, we knew that Vladimir Putin was going to invade Ukraine, and we built a city the size of Waterford with 20,000 homes in it. They'd be full by now. You know, so that's the situation. They would have been full a while ago. So that's the situation we're in. It's not something we're used to. Other countries are used to refugee crises, have histories of refugee camps, things like that, a space we don't want to get into at all. But that is the scale of what we're dealing with.
So what is the long-term
consultation
plan?
Has to be done quite quickly, actually, because you can't say to 3,000 people who arrived in January alone, we need 6 weeks to consult with you. because they're here. Yeah. And that's what we're dealing with.
What's the plan then, the long-term plan going forward? You can't keep kind of going as it is because it's causing divide within communities, which is unfortunate.
Well, the long-term plan is to cope as best we can, to do so in cooperation with our neighbours across Europe. The first European meeting that I'll attend on the 9th and 10th of February is a special meeting of European Prime Ministers to discuss the migration crisis, because what we're experiencing in Ireland is exactly the same as what's being experienced across Europe. It's going to involve trying to bring peace to Ukraine. And of course, the best way to achieve peace in Ukraine is Russia withdrawing. It will involve what we can do to better secure our borders, for example, on a European basis. It'll also involve how we can better share the burden, because you know, some countries are taking more people than others, and traditionally we didn't take very many. Actually, you know, Greece, Italy, France, other countries were expected to bear the burden. That's a little bit different now.
A couple of other issues then, just to touch on as well. What about the hospital crisis? Of course, you have a medical background. Overcrowding. We've heard in emergency departments, including here in Nace and other places around the country, it's a shambles, isn't it?
The situation has improved in the last couple of weeks. We saw record-breaking numbers in the first couple of days of the new year. We have seen that ease quite a lot in the last couple of weeks. As you know, winter comes around every year, but what doesn't happen every year is three very serious viruses in circulation at the same time. In this case, flu, COVID and RSV, and that has now subsided. But there is still serious overcrowding in a lot of hospitals a lot of the time.
Should we not have had the foresight to look ahead maybe this winter? You know, this was the third winter or second or third winter with COVID. We knew it was going to come. We knew there'd be a surge with flu in the winter. Why did we not put the measures in place then to alleviate the pressure in hospitals?
Well, we did. And like, predicting something's going to happen is not the same as identifying the solutions, and not the same as identifying, implementing them and sustaining them, and all three are necessary. So we've added nearly 1,000 beds to our hospital system since this government came into office less than 3 years ago. That's the equivalent of three big hospitals. We've 6,500 more doctors and nurses working in our health service than we had 2.5 years ago. You know, despite the trouble we have recruiting, retaining staff, we still have more staff than we used to, and we're investing in community care and in GPs so that fewer people end up in the hospital in the first place. But that is done against the backdrop of three viruses circulating, a lot of unmet health need that built up during the pandemic when other health services were closed, a rising population and an ageing population. So we're kind of running up an escalator that's coming down at us just to stand still. But like I say, the situation has improved and eased quite a lot since those early days of the new year.
The Caoimhe deal, the forestry deal, what's the situation there? You're quoted as saying it's not the preferred model. We heard from Bernard Durkin on the show on Friday morning saying that he was unhappy with it. He said it's not a deal. It was basically just implemented and forced, really. How did it get through your office as Taoiseach? How did Minister Charney McConnellogue sign off on this? And now you're saying it's not the preferred model. Was there no dialogue between yourself and Minister McConnellogue?
Yeah, well, first of all, it didn't pass through my office. Wasn't signed off by Minister McConnellogue or by the government. Caoimhe is a state-owned enterprise, so it operates like a business, has its own board, makes its own commercial decisions.
Did you have like any prior knowledge of this?
No.
No knowledge?
We're aware of their strategy, but not of this particular arrangement or these particular investors. But I do want to say two things about this. I guarantee if we did start interfering in commercial decisions of companies and interfering with the award of contracts, we'd be having a different interview. You'd probably be telling me that I've been reported to CIPO for doing such a thing. So I think sometimes the opposition is a bit two-faced when they criticise us for interfering, and then when we don't, and we observe the procedures, we're also criticised. But leave that aside for the moment.
You yourself have said it's not the preferred model. Your quote is saying
tell you what the preferred model is, and this is the model. This particular deal that has got a lot of attention for understandable reasons recently accounts for 1% of all new forestry that's going to happen between now and 2050. The preferred model is Irish farmers. Most land in Ireland is owned by Irish farmers, and we want to incentivise them to plant some of their land. And that's why we've put in place a really attractive forestry programme to encourage our farmers to become the ones who do the planting. Very good premiums, tax-free income, for example, and that's going to be the preferred model going forward. And also, in some cases, using state land to plant. There is a lot of misinformation about what this Caoimhe arrangement is, even though, you know, the government isn't happy with it either. There has been some false information put out there. Okay. So, for example, none of it involves public land. No public land is being sold off or privatised. This is all going to be private land, already private land. Most of it's already a forest, and some of it will be bare land, which will be planted. And the state, through ICIF, is actually investing in this. There's a perception put out there that it's all a British company of some sort. Actually, the state's own sovereign wealth fund called ICIF is involved in it too.
Okay, finally then on this, before we discuss your purpose of your visit here in Kildare, obviously recently attention has been drawn on Pascal Donoghue, headlines saying that he survived a Dáil trial by ordeal over election expenses after a bruising 10 days. Mm. It's not necessarily the amount or what is alleged to have happened or what has happened, etc. It's more the principle and the fact that it's distracting, some may say now, of what is the most important topics that should be discussed in Dáil Éireann. Does it kind of interfere, do you think, with the public's confidence in the government when things like this come out?
Well, you know, I can guarantee it didn't distract the government from our work. You know, our work in the last couple of days and couple of weeks has been all about health and housing, the cost of living, trying to negotiate an arrangement on the protocol between the UK and the European Union, legislation that we just approved the other day to abolish hospital charges for adult patients, for example. It's distracted the opposition, who chose to use their time or demanded that all time be used to discuss who put up Pascal's posters. So it certainly hasn't distracted us.
But he still needed to be held account for it. So if the opposition didn't, you know, I wouldn't say expose, but didn't speak about it, what would have happened?
The appropriate body, the Standards Commission, would look into it, and that actually is what's happening. They're also looking into a number of complaints in relation to Sinn Féin's finances, which you'll know about. Mm. We didn't use our time to talk about Sinn Féin's finances. We have more important things to do. So they didn't have to actually use Dáil time to talk about it. It is being dealt with by the Standards Commission. They will look at it independently and make a determination as to whether he's broken any rules and what the sanctions should be. We weren't wasting any time on this at all. We think people care about other things, much, much more important things.
Okay, you're here in Kildare to celebrate, obviously, the Bridget 1500 celebrations. There's lots happening in the county, and I know you've made a number of visits here in Kildare too.
Yeah, so had a chance to visit Solus Breda and to endorse what is called the Pause for Peace campaign, and we're asking people in Ireland and all around the world at 12 o'clock on St. Bridget's Day to pause for one minute to call for peace in the world, and our embassies around the world are going to be taking that up, as will other groups, and also to mark the fact that we have a new public holiday was introduced by the government because we wanted to bring us in line with other European countries where they have 10 public holidays, and we chose St. Bridget's Day. She's a particular association with Kildare, as you know, and I know people in Kildare are very proud of that and are going to make the most of it and keen to support Kildare in that regard. But also, I think, significantly, the first public holiday that's named for a woman. We've others named for men, as you know, and also it connects to our past because it is the traditional Celtic New Year when we went from winter into spring, and there's a period of light and hope, and we hope to hope people will do their best anyway to enjoy what is a new public holiday and helps to break that very long period between New Year's and St. Patrick's Day.
Okay, good stuff. Finally then, obviously, you know, you've just taken over the office as Taoiseach once again, and how would you assess how the government has performed over the last 2 years and how you're going to perform now? You know, what are the plans for the next 2 years as leader of this country?
Well, you know, I think economically we're in a very strong place. You know, we have a job for everyone who wants one. Notwithstanding inflation, people's incomes are rising, standards of living, depending on individual circumstances, have broadly been going in the right direction in the last couple of years. Compared to other countries around the world, I think we're doing very well, but there are huge shortcomings, which I totally understand, particularly on housing, the need to reform our health service. I'm particularly prioritising the whole issue of child poverty and wellbeing. Also keen as well to stand up for farmers and for rural Ireland and to make our towns and cities safer places. So they're the priorities for the next 2 years.
Are you looking over your shoulder at all at the opposition, the likes of Sinn Féin? Do you read much into those polls that, you know, come general election time, which I know is a couple of years away, but...
Well, focus primarily on the job, obviously. And as you say, the election is 2 years away. Opinion polls in the last two elections didn't predict the outcome. You'll remember going into the last election, my party was in first place and Sinn Féin was in third. And by the time the election happened, it was the other way around. They are already, by the way, the biggest party in the last election. But being the biggest party doesn't mean you can form a government. You know, the reason why Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens are the government is combined we got 51% of the vote. And there's no sign of Sinn Féin coming anywhere close to that. And when I became Taoiseach again on the 17th of December, they didn't even put up a candidate because they didn't even know if they had the support of Labour or Social Democrats or the Independents. So I think we're a long way from Sinn Féin government. But that's not my concern at the moment. My concern is on making the most of the time that we have over the next 2 years to protect what's good about Ireland and where there are things that are wrong to try and make them right.
Okay, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, many thanks for your time this morning and thanks for coming in to us.
Thank you.
Okay, last week on the show around Thursday or Friday, we brought news to you that we were hearing that up to 80 refugees would be housed at a stately manor or a former stately house in Leixlip called Ryvale House in the Ryvale Lawns housing estate. That news hadn't been officially confirmed by the Department of Integration. We got in contact with the department. We got a response to say that they would get back to us and we heard nothing since. But over the course of the week, We got our hands on a document that had been circulated regarding Ryvale House, confirming now that it will be used to house refugees. And on the line is local TD in the Leixlip area, co-leader of the Social Democrats, Catherine Murphy. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Owen.
When did you first hear about this, Catherine?
When you rang me on Wednesday evening, or early evening, about 6 o'clock, and I then made contact with people in the department, essentially then they checked and discovered that the application for this to be used was on a list. I then the following day looked for more detail on that. That was the Thursday, and eventually we got this. I was informally told on the Friday before we received this that what was intended was for 80 people with from international protection families and women, single women, and that the intention was that it would be 80 people. Now, just in relation to a tender, apparently, and it's in this document, a tender went out to provide for people to come forward with own door accommodation, and that happened last November. So obviously people have come forward, and this is how these lists are constructed.
Right, and do you know what the process is then, Catherine? Between, and I know you're not a government TD, you're in opposition, but what is the actual process then for the department to choose these sites, and when do the public get told about it? For example, this is different to some of the other centres that we're seeing around the country. This is in a housing estate.
Yes, and this was a house that was built in 1761. I need to describe it. There's seven bedrooms on the top floor. There's some of them would be en suite. Then there would be the next floor would be there's four reception rooms, and then below that there's a utility room, a kitchen, there's a bedroom, and a shower room. And essentially what we're talking about, there are two outbuildings as well that were formerly used as an office, and they have been latterly changed and were used as Airbnb. So I'm presuming that they were, they're set up like that. But we're talking about 80 people here, and that's what I've been querying with the department. Like, have they even looked at this, that they would think that 80 people, could be accommodated in this? Mostly these will be new arrivals, so they won't be permitted to work, so they will be there all day. Mm. And what we've been told in this briefing document, which I'm going to be trying to find more information out on today, and I'm looking for a departmental official to come out and talk to the residents, because what we're seeing now is quite chaotic, where we're hearing very late in the day, sometimes after people have arrived, to a building to be accommodated. We're hearing that that it has happened. The process is very internal to the department, and one of the things that myself and others have been calling for months now is that there's an all of government approach to this, because that particular department appears to be overwhelmed, and I have no doubt officials are working very hard, but there is no consultation happening. It's and what it's doing is it's causing a huge amount of conflict, because people here, and all of a sudden then, you know, they're presuming there's a process, and that process appears to be very internal to the department.
Yeah,
so I don't think they can manage this.
Particularly then on Ryvale Lawns, Catherine, and the question here has to ask, even if there's not consultation, but even to give a courtesy to let residents of the estate know that this is what's going to happen, because as I understand it, there still hasn't been any communication between the department and the residents of Ryvale Lawns housing estate. So it begs the question, if we didn't cover it here on KFM, would the residents still be left in the dark?
Yes, that is absolutely as you describe it. I got this on about 8 o'clock on Friday evening. I immediately passed to the chair of the residents association, because I knew they were having a meeting, and there'll be obviously other meetings, and they're trying to now communicate with the residents. There's 400 houses in this housing estate, and this house is absolutely in the middle of it. It would have been obviously hugely predated the development of the estate, which largely was built in the 1970s. Mm. So, look, this is not the way to treat people, and just as you say, as a courtesy, if nothing else, as a courtesy, whether it's this particular one or others, it's absolutely essential that the department changes their approach to the way they're doing this. There doesn't appear to be a plan. It's all very chaotic. It's all, you know, and I completely appreciate that we have a housing crisis. I completely appreciate, and I've been going on about that for years. I completely appreciate the war in Ukraine, and that there is huge pressure on from homeless services, and also that we have responsibility in relation to international protection. How we manage that is an entirely other matter, and you could be nothing other than critical about how this has been managed in terms of the interaction with the community in relation to the absence of a plan or coherence in relation to how these decisions are made.
Okay, that's in relation to leak slip, and we still have to find out as to when an actual timeline here, when those refugees will move into Ryvale House in Ryvale Lawns. Before I let you go, Catherine, also in Kildare North, we know what's happening there at the Equestrian Centre in Kill, which it would seem as though that is going to be used now to house refugees, and that's been confirmed. It was circulated maybe that refugees will be moving in today, Monday, but as I understand it, that's not the case. Have you got any more information on the Kill Equestrian Centre?
Yeah, I checked that out on Friday, and obviously I'll be back on to the department again today. But I checked that out on Friday, and they said it had not been concluded. Now, it appears that it may well be that what they're talking about that has not been concluded is the financial arrangements. I asked, was it going to happen today? And I was told, no, it wasn't, that it has not been concluded. That is the information I have as of Friday, but I will be back on again today to see if I can find out more.
Okay, if we get any more information, then of course we'll bring it to you here on KFM. But for the moment, that is Catherine Murphy, co-leader of the Social Democrats, Kildare North TD. Thanks for joining us, Catherine. Look, I'm not going to go down the route again of consultation, because I feel like every morning I'm coming on here and saying it. But the point still stands. We got word of this on Wednesday, and on Thursday we brought it to you here on the station just to inform residents of Ryvale Lawns, and we're more than happy to do that. But is that the job?
Is that our job? Should that not be the job of the local representatives of the government as a courtesy to let residents in certain areas know if there's 80 refugees moving into your housing estate to a stately manner, to just give you the courtesy of saying, by the way, this is going to happen, rather than it just, you know, happening out of the blue and residents then saying, well, we weren't told. We should have been told about this. And I understand and completely see, you know, from a point of view of those who are putting, developers maybe, who are putting their names forward to try and help out. I see where they're coming from. But I think the key issue here is communication, communication, communication. If we hear anything more, as I said, we'll keep you up to date here on KFM. That's the situation in Ryvale House in Leixlip and in the Kill Equestrian Centre. Anything more we have, you'll hear it first here.